Hi, and welcome to the Cloud Computing Show, episode number 44, the This Year in Cloud Edition Roundtable. I am here with a group of esteemed colleagues, James Waters, the Group Manager, Market Development and Strategy at VMware. Good morning, James.
A very early good morning, Gary.
Yep. Brian Bulkowski, the CEO of Citrusleaf. Hi, Brian.
Good morning, Gary.
And all the way from Europe, Adrian Cole, the founder of JClouds, on the Skype line. Adrian, good morning, good evening, whatever that may be.
Guten Abend.
There we go. Tell us where you are exactly so everybody can get the scene in their mind.
Over in Nuremberg, Germany, right outside the famous Christmas market over here.
Excellent. And I'm Gary Ornstein, the host of the Cloud Computing Show. We're going to do just a couple of minutes of industry news and then jump into roundtable topics for this year in cloud, covering some of the activity throughout 2010, some predictions for 2011. And we'll just start right in. A couple of small things. There have been a bunch of AWS announcements recently, most notably the Route 53, are they calling it, for their DNS service. Is everybody going to have their own DNS service now? Google has their DNS service. Amazon's going to have their DNS service. How's that going to work?
Well, it's one of the most important parts of the entire internet infrastructure. I mean, people start duplicating when stuff is breaking down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, you kind of have to own it to own your availability. I think they also announced some other things that were somewhat of note yesterday.
Yeah, give us an update on that.
There was a little bit of interesting conversation around that. They announced a VMDK upload to support ostensibly a VMware format, at least incoming.
Natively.
Well, they don't actually support it. They'll translate it. So,
gotcha. So this is for people who have an existing VMware virtual machine and want to get that into the Amazon cloud.
Yeah.
A little more simply.
Yeah, and the most interesting part of that is they didn't allow you to ever leave. I literally asked Jeff Barr, I said, well, does it support translation out? You know, assuming you're doing this test dev scenario that they talk about or
right,
something, right?
Right.
He's like, no, we don't do that.
Well, you know, they might do it later on, so.
Yeah.
I know you have your own ideas.
Yeah, they might open source their API later on, too.
Right. All right, other news, we had a platform as a service acquisition. CloudBees bought Stax. Adrian, you were mentioning that just before we started the recording. Give us a quick update there.
Yeah, Stax is one of the earlier entries into the Java application as a service. So there's been a lot of attention duly noted and duly worthwhile on the Ruby Rails providers like Heroku Engine Yard. And outside of Google App Engine, there haven't been as much visibility in the Java space. And all the while, Stax has thousands of applications that they've been running. So the what's notable about this with the merger with CloudBees is it takes their dev to run story and finishes it off. So, for example, before they were more focused on code analysis and continuous integration with Hudson and such like that, and their vision supported, eventually getting to a production runtime. And so this is where they're going to be able to integrate that faster than before, because they will be able to integrate with the Stax, which is also a Java runtime. So whenever that integration finishes, which I think is going to be another part of our conversation today, like how long do these integrations take? But when that happens, you'd have a true dev to run story in CloudBees.
Nice. And then just this morning, we saw an announcement that Rackspace acquired CloudKick. We all know Alex over there, and
yeah,
he's a great guy and a great team overall. Who wants to give us an update on that, about a little bit about what they do and what this means for Rackspace potentially?
Sure. Yeah, I think I consider myself friends with Alex, and congrats, Alex. Great job. Those guys did nothing but code and work for the last couple of years. I mean, humble team that all, I think we were even roommates for a while, just coding away like this great mission in San Francisco story.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting where Rackspace is going to go with multi-cloud management. So my question would be, are they buying this to be their new management infrastructure in terms of their UI and the way that you access the Rackspace Cloud, or do they want to meaningfully get into this kind of multi-cloud software space?
Yeah.
So I think it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I'll say the exit is a little bit early. I mean, I think one thing that struck me about Mercara and this is these are both, I believe, A-round companies.
Right.
Taking an exit. And, you know, you guys have been in the VC world. Sometimes that happens because the B-round guys aren't really excited about giving you $5 or $10 million because you don't have a revenue ramp.
Right.
So I'm not both friends with both of these companies, but I think in the broader market sense, it's a question of is there how much revenue of the company building size is there out there to be acquired on the cheap?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it will be really interesting in terms of what acquisitions will we see and at what stage will we see as companies try to build out their portfolios across this. One question that popped up in the back of my mind, I don't know if it's directly appropriate to this with CloudKick, is this something that they might actually try to include also in some of the OpenStack functionality? Would that be something that Rackspace would want to do and make it part of that mission as well? You know, we'll have to see over time how that shakes out.
Yeah, I guess the question is, are they going to open source this tomorrow?
Well, probably not tomorrow.
Well, but I mean, honestly, it's an honest question now that they're waving the open source flag.
Yeah. All right, well, those are just a couple of small news announcements that we saw. Let's jump right into some of our big picture theme topics. And one that is near and dear to many of our hearts, and James and Adrian, I'm speaking primarily to you guys, is that I think we've moved from this infrastructure as a service as the primary discussion around cloud computing to this platform as a service around cloud computing. And to me, announcements like what we saw with CloudBees and Stax, and announcements like what we saw with Salesforce and Heroku is sort of the last definitive points of this theme that we've seen throughout 2010. What do you guys think?
I think you could easily contrast that against some of the negative undercurrents that's out there around Microsoft Azure. And I think it's not because it's necessarily a bad product for what it does, but I think there's some people who question its market fit. Mm-hmm. And how broadly applicable is it to the average workload? Is the regular person ready to go and use it? I know Adrian has always been a fan of how they've executed on their specific functionality, but you know the RedMonk guy has been blogging for a while about PaaS providers are disappointed right now.
PaaS providers are disappointed?
Platform as a service providers disappointed in some of their performance. And I can give you some color on why. So I'm actually going to agree with you, but I'm going to say that this is a little bit of the early offerings maybe didn't have market fit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reason is that they had kind of a too opinionated of a back end. So they said, nope, you can do whatever you want, but you have to use this little strange concoction SQL on the back end. And, you know, when you force a developer into some new database model and some new data model, I think you're kind of going about PaaS in an interesting way, which is that I think you've got to have a lot of polyglot persistence in the back end so that they don't have to change their data model in order to use a platform as a service. And I think the mistake Azure made was they're like, nope, use this traditional thing, and then we'll put all the real rocket science on this, on managing.
Well, I just want to disagree with you a little bit, because I think with Microsoft, their target market is Microsoft customers, right? People who are using .NET Framework to build out their infrastructure, build out their applications. And I think for them, that market of existing traditional software deployment is big enough that they can launch their entire service with that focus. But they've also been very broad in at least talking about support for other platforms, whether that's Java or Ruby, et cetera. Now, I don't know how far that's gone from talk to actually implementation and availability of those services. But Brian, let's get your point, and then we'll jump over to you, Adrian.
Well, for developers, I think there's some really interesting points, and I agree, James, that the platform as a service, part of it comes down to, are you going to rewrite your apps? And the guys at Netflix, you were talking earlier about Adrian and that effort,
Yeah. They've
sort of famously said, look, we had to rewrite every line of code in Netflix
mm-hmm.
in order to properly work on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's face it, it's just less reliable. You have to rethink how you do things. You have to rethink message passing. And if you look at the success of Heroku and their 100,000 applications, it's really around you have to start from ground zero. You look at a company like Mercara, which I think it's true, just has not had the uptake we all have hoped it has.
Yeah.
Mercara's strategy has been what I call you run what you brung. So what they say is you take your standard LAMP stack, and we're going to instrument it underneath the covers, And really, they've had nowhere near the uptake of a company like Heroku that comes in with, I think, a simpler story in some way. Just rewrite everything to a completely new infrastructure, and then everything will be fine. And that does actually work better when you're dealing with the unreliability and lack of reliability that we see in some of the public clouds.
I think it's good. Great points. I think it's good to put color around Heroku to some extent. They were, you know, there's a survey done by GigaOm, who you're very close with, or that was mentioned at Mobilize this year, which was that the average mobile phone developer right now, it's kind of a gold rush, and they've been doing it for less than 6 months. So they haven't been developing these apps for that long. They're not the Adrians of the Netflix of the world. And Heroku filled a really nice niche where in this lower end, when you just wanted to push something out there and get going on it, they would be your ops department. But how many of the Netflixes of the world, I mean, this is the classic conversation. And I don't think that platform as a service will really take off as a predominant method for a lot of big apps until you can have interesting backends.
Not need to change your backend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to this end, you know, there's actually a blog post where Azure gave their service away to a service, and they said, please run on us. And the guy's like, oh, I got to muck with my data every night to get it into your...
A lot of it does end up coming down to data and the data APIs. Storage does end up being part of the hardest component of scaling a service.
Adrian, you live in this world every day with JClouds and other projects. Give us your take on sort of the rise of PaaS and some of the big themes in the market.
I think some of the parts of the discussion kind of hit on the same point, and that's that, you know, the dream of EC2 is that and you're getting the infrastructure, therefore you don't have to rewrite your app. But what Brian says, that like, well, look what we found out, we have to rewrite our app there too. And so the idea that you're going to have either a platform as a service or just an infrastructure as a service and nakedly run your existing apps on it, probably either would fail. The only ones that might work closer to that would be more like your Cohesive or your cloud switch type of deals, which actually simulate the entire infrastructure. But I think that where we've gotten to a point where what we want is to not change anything, but we keep finding that we have to change things, even in the infrastructure as a service cloud offerings. So I think that's probably worth noting. From a platform as a service or even some of these other extended services like DNS, the interesting thing with the DNS providers is that, look, we've taken something that we've had an API form for longer than most other things in the internet, and we've managed to make it proprietary again. And, you know, so, like, some of these things are just, again, about cat herding of APIs and how are you going to use these things and how much is that going to impact either your operational code or your, you know, business code. But, you know, there a lot of these things find many ways of locking you in. Like, the more features that you get out of an infrastructure provider, the more kind of like infrastructure lock-in you have, the more things you get out of a platform as a service provider like Google App Engine, all of the image rendering hooks that you might use there, the more you're locked in there. And people choose to lock themselves in. So I think that where people, you know, organizations find that, you know, this is worth it, and it's worth it for them to take the risk of buying to something that's not available somewhere else, then, you know, it's okay. But on the Azure part, I think that, you know, the kind of quiet announcement of the year is, you know, with Microsoft allowing you to run the VM role in Azure, which was sort of like their EC2, as long as you only use Windows thing. And that's basically, that was, you know, back from demand for people to have more control over what's underneath of the platform. And it would allow you to make interesting infrastructures where you have a combination of you know, built from the OS up, applications conversing with data stores that are on platform APIs. And I think that this sort of hybrid architecture where you have sort of mix and match type of stuff can be very attractive to people. And I think that's why you'll get, you know, Microsoft and you, I don't know, I wouldn't be surprised at all if Amazon ends up with some sort of a platform as a service you know, code deployment tool as well. And, you know, what we've got going forward is it's definitely interesting to enough people to start acquiring and merging these like code deployment tools like Stacks and Heroku and all these guys. the question is that how does this play out? So like last year we were talking a lot about, you know, will this be the year of the platform, or I'm not even sure, maybe that's exactly what we were saying.
One of the things we said last year, sorry to interrupt you, Adrian, is there room between infrastructure as a service and platform as a service as distinct offerings? And I think that's gone.
I think it's just the fact that it's getting more and more dangerous to be a small fish around, because you have, you know, for example, you have like a Red Hat sponsored company now, you know, who has a web deployment tool with Google sized company and for your monitoring needs, you'd have a CloudKick type offering. So I think that like when you have a cloud infrastructure provider or someone who may become a cloud infrastructure provider, offering up platforms, it's probably harder and harder to compete at a commodity level.
Mm-hmm.
So for the commodity deployments, I think it's going to be more and more difficult.
Yeah. Well, this is really going to be, I think, again, continued area of interest to watch. And so we will certainly keep an eye on things. And we definitely want to get the CloudBees and Stacks folks to come on and talk a little bit about this. So hopefully they're listening. And they'll.
And I'd also mention, given the building we're in here at VMware, that we have now up something, vcloudlabs.com,
mm-hmm.
which includes some slides that give you a preview of our methodology around building a platform as a service.
Nice.
And that's a project I'm also working on. So I think you'll see some interesting things out of that. And I think PaaS will be big. It's just a question of what are these early motions? What didn't we get right? Understanding that to really open the floodgate.
Right. Great. Well, let's change topics a little bit and shift over to big data. This is something that we've all been following. There's certainly a ton of activity. Brian, you live in this world every day. Give us some of your big picture thoughts for the year past and the year ahead.
Well, the biggest thing that happened over the course of this year was analytics really coming of age. So people realized that, you know, as business intelligence, you know, continued its onward role to becoming the most important thing a business does, if you can't track it, it's not even worth doing. The companies that have been playing so hard in that space, you know, some great exits with Netezza's acquisition by IBM. And the Greenplum EMC acquisition, Aster still out there as an independent. But more importantly, the Hadoop infrastructure out there continuing its role in open source, and the ability, since you know Hadoop fits in really well with cloud methodologies, more and more people rolling out Hadoop systems. So I think what we saw, then you see a lot of companies out there around that, what I'll mention as my cloud tip, Loggly, the ability to simply pull in logs and then visualize them. What I see in from that sort of big data analytics where people are sucking in data and just expecting to get insight out of it, that's also actually been true in the area that I'm working, that CitrusLeaf is working in, advertising. So advertisers are now much more about insight, using insight to drive advertising new creatives as opposed to simply using algorithms to place better ads and get more lift. So what that means is the ability to use usual, often cloud-style systems to take much larger sets of data and visualize them for advertising use.
So let me ask you, is there a big data market, or is it really a big analytics market that we're talking about?
Well, the biggest data is certainly this warehouse concept where you chunk everything into the warehouse and then you've got a bunch of math heads on the back. And you know, the last couple of years, being a mathematician has actually been a great job within computer science, is probably for the first time that I remember in the last 30 years. So what we're working with CitrusLeaf is, how do you actually make this actionable? How do you actually blend the transactional capabilities and the need to respond in real time with that back-end warehouse?
Right.
How do you start beginning the consolidation? So I think that where my crystal ball is seeing this entire big data world is, analytics was the focus over the last couple of years, bringing that into the cloud, being able to use the huge storage arrays that you need a large data center for, and then actually turning that into the transactional workload that you can use to drive your business.
Right. The other area we see this a lot besides advertising is social games. You know, we constantly hear about use cases around Zynga doing stuff with big analytics, and so that's another hot area for deployment of this technology.
Well, one thing we haven't really talked about too much is Facebook as a platform. It's kind of an interesting question, because if you want to write for Facebook, you have to use Facebook's APIs, and you have to actually exist within the Facebook infrastructure. Now, Facebook itself being a cloud service in some sense, in the same way that, say, Salesforce is, which I would say is not really a cloud service, it's just a service. And then Facebook requires you to host your own servers, whether those servers might be in the cloud or, you know, wherever you put them, but they do force you to use their APIs and systems. So we've never really talked about that as one of the potential sort of cloud movers. But the fact is people like Zynga have to exist within that infrastructure. And so there are companies starting to emerge, especially within advertising, since Facebook now is starting to drive more and more of the ad revenue, where how do I hook into Facebook and how do I make that into sort of an ecosystem that is almost more cloud-based and platform-based than we've seen before?
Yeah, that's really interesting. What companies, can you tell me more?
I've got some conversations over the next few days with some people, so I'll tell you more next time.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I think that's going to be a really interesting area. I mean, if you think of the two big fire hoses of data, I mean, one thing that I've been trying to understand is what are all the big fire hoses that people are kind of playing in? So obviously the Facebook API, in and out, Twitter, there's a couple here. And I also saw that Citibank launched this company of their own, a spinoff, based on the data of their purchasers.
Right.
So I think everyone's trying to crack this nut, either as part of their existing business or as a new business. And I think one thing that'll be interesting, you know, at the end of next year is to say, what are all the big fire hoses that people care about?
Right.
The company, I believe, Factual, just got funded again.
A major round of funding.
Yeah.
Because I think it was something like $25 million. And the investors behind it saying that this is a big project. It's going to take years and years and years. You know, the revenue might not come tomorrow, but we're in this for the long haul.
Yeah. And look at that versus, you know, two early exits from cloud management companies. You try to see the forest and the trees, right?
Yeah. Adrian, from an API perspective, are you seeing anything where people are getting more sophisticated as opposed to just dealing with storage blobs to sort of moving up to anything that might be more capable of doing analytics or queries from an API perspective?
From an analyst standpoint, I think that we're getting a little bit more tooling about APIs that are commonly used within a specific context. Like, so for example, we've this year now have a MapReduce API that you get out of the box with Google App Engine. There's definitely a significant more tooling, almost linear to the amount of funding that Cloudera gets in the Hadoop community as far as periphery about, you know, bringing in more data and from various sources with tools like Flume. I think that there's plenty of room to grow in the tooling to make the analytics job easier, at least under the API. If your goal is to have a data set, you know, actually pulling in all the data and doing all the transformations and any sort of filtering that's necessary to achieve the shape that you want. I think there's definitely work there, and some of it's pretty infant. So I think that's going to improve. From a service perspective, I'm still kind of surprised that, you know, like from Elastic MapReduce, that's really the only significant player out there. From a blob to anything more interesting standpoint, when I was over in Sweden, I had a chance to meet the guys from JWay, who are behind a interesting toolbox called Qi for J, like QI for J, and they're doing some interesting things somewhat related to what some of the Neo for J guys are doing with alternate tree parsing type of data sets. And so I think that where last year we kind of thought of them as blob, columnar, document oriented as like the top three, and everybody else was kind of like very far below. I wouldn't be surprised if we have node-based graph databases more popular, because they already seem to be showing their face more often this year.
Emil.
Yeah, our buddy Emil. We got to get him on the show next time. I totally agree. Given the focus on the socialization of all of this data and these node points, whether they be individuals or other abstract entities, that seems to be a natural fit.
One last thing that I'd say, Gary, is that everyone assumes that this is all kind of Hadoop, Cloudera, chuck it in your data warehouse, But the NoSQL guys have a lot to say about this analytics motion, because in terms of analyzing logs, analyzing web clicks, analyzing behavior, I'm not always seeing people go the whole way to a higher latency or just big data warehouse to do this. I'm seeing a lot of people do MapReduce jobs right in their NoSQL database.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something worth mentioning, that there is this kind of middle ground sweet spot. And a lot of people that are using NoSQL, like social gaming folks, to get, you know, kind of low latency transactions, are using that same engine to extract insight out of it without going to a traditional kind of tiered enterprise model of spill down.
Right.
Yeah, there's. I think that's going to be a coming trend. I don't see it really as doing it within NoSQL, but I see it really as a consolidation. Part of what we believe at CitrusLeaf is that you really shouldn't have two different copies of your data.
Yeah.
Any data architecture where you have two copies is probably the wrong answer. So over time, what we're going to see is anything in the middle, you know, you've got a transactional, the portion of your data that's actually taking the load, then you've got this warehouse. Either the warehouses have to come down, but as people are trying to use HBase to actually do transactional load, they find a lot of technical cracks and problems, whereas the NoSQL guys who started with fast transactions are having a lot more success in actually driving up through the MapReduce stack.
Yeah.
That's exactly what we're doing at CitrusLeaf too. I think that's a natural technical evolution.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important for people to know that not everyone's just doing your standard kind of document querying in Mongo. There's a lot of MapReduce going on.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And to illustrate this, one thing viewers at home can take a look at is on GitHub, Tom White has a project which basically just has an image file in it called Hadoop-ecosystem. And he's been keeping this up to date. It's based on an oldie but goodie tool called Dot, which helps you draw relationships between things. And you can see for yourself the numerous new projects that are out, like taking the MapReduce world where we've used to simplify things by saying, like, you know, Hadoop is MapReduce, and see all of the various tools and command-driven tool suites that are now coming out, and all sorts of other things that maybe you wouldn't have seen last year.
Yeah, it's like sounds like a mind map of sorts, just sketching everything out there.
Yeah, about 12 different projects that take various angles on, like, the DevOps spectrum from build to run.
Great. Let's jump into another topic. I want to talk about cloud stacks. You know, we had a bunch a year ago. We had a few more this year. I mean, some of the newcomers, or not newcomers, but smaller players, in addition to the big folks like Amazon and VMware and Microsoft, but we've now got folks like cloud.com. We had the OpenStack initiative that was kicked off this summer. Probably we have Eucalyptus, of course. It's been around. Most recently, we had...
Are they still around?
Nimbula. Hey, come on, man.
I didn't know.
We just did a big announcement with Red Hat. We had Nimbula, which is the most recent coming into to the picture. Are we going to see any new cloud stacks in the future, or is this now the time to sort of pick?
I hope not, for God's sake.
I feel bad for some of the VCs that got caught in this. And I'll give you my two cents on this, is that, and I was actually saying this to some folks last night over drinks, this is an honest, you know, employer hat off comment, which is that you can really get mistaken in cloud, just like we talk about PaaS. You're like, oh, it's just deploy code, and then that's what PaaS is, right? But it turns out there's all these other contingencies. And I think the people who thought they could just do the VM handler and, well, hey, that was cloud, and they didn't bring along the persistence on their back end, the detachable storage, and all the other things that makes cloud useful. So these people have put $100 million valuations on something that just provides the VM service. And I don't think that's going to be a winner, given how competitive the market is. I mean, you mentioned this to me. It takes big money to...
Yeah, well, I was amazed throughout 2010 how many companies there were that were claiming to shepherd, assuming I was an enterprise, my virtual machines for me and organize that for me. And I, even as a guy who tracks the industry, I was confused in following all these people. And I think, to your point, what we've seen is just doing that portion of shuffling virtual machines is not going to make even a product, for that matter, because it's not enough.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think you can, I mean, if people already trust you with virtual machines and their virtual storage, you know, kind of the VMware case, you have got good runway to do that. But if you come in and just as Eucalyptus and you're like, hey, here's what, I mean, they have some storage stuff, but I think it's going to be tough. And I think also, you know, OpenStack is not really a product yet, but it was a marketing bombshell to these guys.
Yeah.
I mean, you saw them all kind of slowly, like, do the, you know, slow motion car wreck. They made all the motions of trying to avoid it. They're like, oh, I don't want to say anything about it. Oh, wait, we're going to go to the second conference. Oh, but it's not really a product. What are we going
to
do?
But now everybody has got something to say relative to OpenStack. I mean, even people who you would think have an entire infrastructure that could stand on its own without OpenStack are talking about doing projects with OpenStack.
And maybe
that's just an open source love fest. I don't know.
It's a great movement right now in terms of its marketing. I think that one other thing I'll mention, though, is if you look at the revenue model of someone like a cloud.com, I've heard whispers that they're having a hard time getting to real revenue because a lot of SPs are buying them, hoping that their revenue is going to ramp, right? So you've got this double tier of risk is that, yes, they have to acquire customers, and then their customers have to acquire customers.
Right.
So
it really is a new market for these stacks. I mean, the only a few of the giants are really ahead and have anything measurable in terms of revenue. You know, earlier this year we heard that, you know, Amazon was at 500 million-ish revenue. But if they're the biggest, supposedly, and that's the revenue, the market's still not that big.
And that includes all their hardware, right? I mean, that includes the data center portion.
Yeah.
So that's not even remotely software. I mean, look at Amazon's total company valuation. It's not that high compared to software companies. I mean, for the whole company.
Yeah. Adrian, are we going to see any more cloud stacks?
Well, I think, well, it depends on what we mean by cloud stacks, right? If we're talking about infrastructure, cloud controller stacks. So I think that there, you know, this year we also had the Nebula. We have the, I think what's going to be interesting to see is any of the players that kind of haven't made very public movements here, but have had experience in either operating system control or VM management in the past. Like, you know, and I don't know, maybe they already have one, but you know, perhaps a NetApp cloud or you know, various other stores, which may or may not end up using the same tools behind common APIs. Like this year, I thought was very interesting is that there's been more adoption of standard REST APIs. And so, for example, there was an announcement I read last month that the OpenStack is going to be implementing the Aukey API, and that the Abiquo guys, who I mention quite often, are using the SunCloud API as their back-end admin API and the vCloud as their front-end API. And so I think that what's been interesting to me is that there has been some movement towards, you know, towards some consolidation of front-end, if you will, APIs for these cloud controllers, which could actually help service providers do more tuned back-ends. Like, and also it helps them produce more features faster. Mm-hmm. So I think that as you look at how Amazon's been going really far wide as far as the amount of services, you know, almost a monthly release schedule of new like broader amount of services, you've seen some similar things out of like a Terramark, for example, where they came in to this year with the vCloud Express. But they're coming out with a new offering with eCloud, which has more extensions than there are standard features in the vCloud API. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty interesting to see what the impact is of like a stack, and also what API they're based on, and then how wide are they getting. And I think that the wider APIs are somewhat indicative of the seriousness of their usage. For example, if you can get by with a three-year-old EC2 API, you probably have some pretty basic use cases. But when you get or you have a very commodity hardware-based infrastructure, you know, like maybe your traditional MapReduce type of thing.
Right.
But when you see a lot of the more enterprise type of features, you know, getting into the APIs themselves, whether it's global load balancing services or you know, volume control or you know, in a certain degree, tagging, since tagging can be used for so many different features, I think it's really indicative of the stacks getting wider. And I think that the stacks will get wider next year.
That's an interesting point.
I kind of echo the hope that it won't be too many more.
Right.
But at least if they become more useful, then we shouldn't get more. If they all represent 3-year-old EC2, then I say, you know, we'll have another. I'd rather have someone dethrone a very useless API than you know keep us from having more API options.
I just want to remind folks that both Cloud.com, Nimbula, and Eucalyptus have all been on the Cloud Computing Show, so we'll put links to those folks if people want to hear direct from the source. And one of the interesting things that Chris Pinkham from Nimbula said is that it's not about the API when it comes to cloud stacks. And, you know, as a former Amazoner, that's a hard-charging comment. But what he talks about is that it's the services that are offered in the context of that stack. And maybe that's what you mean by when you say wider or breadth, Adrian. I'm not sure. But that was...
Yeah, that's exactly it. Because, I mean, it's those features that really represent things that are... So, for example, if the point of cloud, like one of it is that you're supposed to be able to get this expertise on demand, you know, paid by the hour or whatever, right? So there's somebody behind the API that's running around and racking things or installing your WAR file for you in a symbolic sense. But if everything you have to do is in your realm of control, then you still have to have the same amount of expertise as you did before, perhaps more. So when we have, you know, when I keep saying wider, but what I mean, when we have more in-depth functionality coming out of the cloud providers, some of these, you know, pretty difficult to maintain infrastructures become the responsibility of the service provider, freeing you up again. So I think that's actually real, you know, notable and visible progress we're seeing where, you know, it's not about launching VMs, really. I mean, that's, as I think James was mentioning earlier, that's just a part of it, but sophisticated functionality that actually keeps you from having to hire these sophisticated engineers to support is sort of the cloud ideal.
Yeah, I think a couple of points there, just anecdotally, I think are interesting. Liddy Leong, one of Gartner's cloud bloggers and analysts, went to two conferences this year. One was their app guys, the new app architects, and one was their data center guys. Data center guys have a lot of the money, right? That's where a lot of the money comes from. You often say that the data center drives the economy, right? And she said the app guys are all playing around with commodity public clouds, and they're kind of interested in it, and they'll talk about it. And she was surprised by that. And then she said, but all these ops guys, they're like comfy with Terramark, and they like these features. And I think it doesn't take too much intelligence to just open the covers and say, well, one is more of a commodity approach where you don't have these operational features to make things robust or, you know, to do interesting things. And this is where I thought the idea of VMDK upload kind of just showed their arrogance, right? They're like, oh, it's fine. You don't want all those features that make sure your VM stays up and has multiple network redundancy and multiple storage path redundancy. Just chuck it into a piece of, you know, hope.
You know, piece of hope.
And I'm sorry to say it, but you have to understand your buyers. And I think this arrogance of, well, it's cloud. Don't you want it? Has got to end.
Well, wait a minute. I think you got to be also a little, you know, crass here. To be a little crass here, if you're trying to sell to an ops guy, yes, the fact that he's going to get fired because his job is moving to Amazon, you know, of course he's going
to. But
want
then why
a
did they like Terramark? I mean, to be honest, why did they say we can trust Terramark? We like Terramark,
and it gives the ops guys more control, which means they still have a job.
Fair enough. There is an agency cost for sure. But there's also an agency cost on the dev side, which is,
right,
have you ever tried to hire...
It moves from an ops guy to developers. So it shifts, the control system shifts over to a different part of the organization, and one guy gets fired and the other guy gets to hire. And that's a standard problem whenever you have technology shifts, right?
No one has ever shown me what it's cheaper to do, to hire...
Absolutely.
No one has ever said, because I know that hiring top developers is really hard. Try hiring Adrian, really. I dare you.
If I can add one thing, which is similar, which is we haven't mentioned yet database.com.
Right, we did. We
which
forgot
is
about that.
Salesforce's offering. And I was on their site today trying to figure out what their API is. They're not claiming to support SQL, but they're not claiming to support NoSQL. It sort of looks like their website is this funny little shell, which, you know, if I was going to be... might just be, I don't know how to get inside it.
Well, I bet you they support a force.com application.
Well, I'm sure they do.
That might be the extent of it for now.
But what is their data storage API going to be like? You know, with our, all of our questions. And then this, the other question is, how do you sell a database.com thing where the DBA is the guy that you go ask and say, hey, should we switch to database.com? And the DBA goes, huh, I lose my job.
No,
of course,
database.com.
I don't know. You can't trust it because it doesn't have the management APIs.
I don't buy that losing the job thing, because whether it's a database locally or a database in the cloud, it's going to need somebody that is a company employee who's going to have oversight of that. And, you know, they're going to have to manage it, whether it's on database.com or whether it's on some local, whatever, MySQL server. So I don't think it's quite that drastic.
I don't know. I mean, I think some of the things that DBAs do sort of go away if you do the next generation.
Agreed. Some goes away, but you're still going to need people.
Well, some of it comes down to fear. Just because there is still a job, and just because a huge amount of their infrastructure is still using in-house databases or is using MySQL in the cloud or something like that, doesn't mean that someone, a DBA isn't, or a ops guy isn't afraid of the coming cloud, true or not.
Yeah. I want to jump into a quick topic on infrastructure. This year has been a huge area of consolidation across the major infrastructure folks, IBM, HP, Cisco, Dell, Oracle now with their Sun acquisition. We saw a mad rush in the storage land grab. You know, last year, Data Domain, this year, 3PAR, Isilon, Compellent, all with a billion or plus or close to $1 billion valuations.
Wow.
What is next? It seems like everybody's now got, they've got their storage solutions in place. What's next for these big infrastructure providers in the context of focusing on public cloud, private cloud? What's going to assimilate from your guys' perspective?
You're the storage guy, Gary, so I have a question for you. Do you think that these acquisitions are preemptive or reactive?
I think it's a combination. In the case of 3PAR, I think it was pretty simple that HP wanted a scalable block-level storage solution that could support thousands or tens of thousands of virtual machines for public or private cloud scenarios. In the case of Isilon, you know, EMC wanted a scale-out file system that was bulletproof, which Isilon has got there, and they've got great traction in select markets. With Compellent, I think Dell was making up for the fact that they missed the 3PAR acquisition, making longer-term plans to phase out some of their reliance on the EMC Clarion line, EMC's mid-range. So I think they all, you know, it comes in waves, and, you know, this was obviously a wave in 2010 of storage acquisitions. All of these companies, by the way, 3PAR, Isilon, Compellent, were 10 years old. So this doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah.
But I think it was a combination. I think they're looking forward to how are we going to architect more flexible solutions for cloud computing, public-private scenarios, and then also just filling some gaps where the older solutions were getting a little long in the tooth.
I think the elephant in the room in storage, though, is still flash. And so when you look at 3PAR, whose entire business was selling, you know, washing machine size, you know, how to organize 1,000 disk drives when you needed 1,000 disk drives, when a Fusion I.O. could come in and replace it with, you know, one little card you could hold in your hand, there was a lot of writing on the wall that the storage market is going to change radically over the next few years due to flash. You know, I'm still upset that EC2 doesn't support flash as a provider, and I wish that the cloud
They did GPUs before they fixed their storage IO issue.
Yeah,
those guys are such wonks.
But, you know, the companies like Fusion IO are doing great in this space, and the huge number of disk drive offerings with the SandForce controllers out there. I mean, the storage market is about to change, and that's the real elephant in the room.
And just in the spirit of disclosure, I do need to share with the audience that I did join Fusion IO recently.
Ooh,
as Vice President of Product and Technical Marketing. We don't always try to bring, you know, try to keep the show as independent as possible, but I just wanted to let folks know about that. So my question is, okay, so these guys have got some of the storage pieces in place, but what's next? What are the missing pieces? And I have a few ideas of my own, and then I want to hear if you guys, you know, have anything to add. I think networking is going to rear its head again, and whether that's through new companies such as Nasira and M-Brain, which are doing some very cool things on the networking side, or on the 10 gig and 40 gig or 100 gigabit Ethernet side with companies like Arista, I think we will see a resurgence of networking activity. James, you've been a big proponent that cloud platforms need more robust networking capabilities, more I/O capabilities. I think that these cloud platforms are going to, some of these smaller folks that we talked about, whether that's cloud.com, Nimbula, Eucalyptus, we're going to see those potentially merge in with some of these large folks. And then, you know, two other areas that are somewhat sub-segments of the storage market that I think are going to get a lot of traction are virtual desktop infrastructure, and we've seen a lot of optimizations around solutions there, and also the cloud storage gateways. How do we get enterprises onto the cloud without having to have them re-architect applications? So let's put a box or a virtual machine on their premise that makes it look like a traditional storage device, but gives them access to one or more cloud providers. So those are just some of the areas that I think are potentially ripe for assimilation into these giant, you know, two- and three-letter companies that are controlling the infrastructure world. But open to any of the thoughts that you guys have.
Well, one thing I'd say about these gateway companies is that they're able to pick off a select set of value. I mean, when part of the problem with just building VM dial tone by itself, if you don't have a good ecosystem, is that it takes a lot of wrapper around that to make that really useful. Whereas if you are a store simple and you say, we're going to do your Microsoft Exchange, certain types of files, go in, pick that off, get that win, I think that's a better market fit strategy.
Yeah, we certainly see that, yeah, those people who can focus and just pick something off, that's an easy win. And I know with Exchange 2010, there's a lot of opportunity for those guys in the way that the solution's architected and the availability set up and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of a classic startup with a business plan, a target focus. It's not just, you know, hey, this cloud thing, we better have a play in that as a VC, and it'll take the time and it'll evolve. And I'm not saying the cloud's not real. I'm just saying that the reason these companies are going to do well, I believe, is they can pick off value and they can grow from that with real revenue.
Adrian, any thoughts from your perspective as to some areas that are ripe for assimilation to these major infrastructure players?
Well, the thing that I've been thinking about more often when you start talking about, like, you know, large data and people's ability to consume it or adopt it from various places, which I think that it's one thing to produce the devices, the other thing to combat, like, the usage patterns. And so I feel like the driver to move more data around, which would then have this impact in you know, more demand for sophisticated network and storage equipment, is getting better at classifying services and data from jurisdiction and stewardship and physical geolocation standpoints. And I feel like this sort of movement where we can, you know, from a conceptual move, would end up driving more demand. Because when you can get to a place where you can reliably identify, you know, which jurisdictions your information can be and cannot be in, it kind of opens up a whole new class of services that people haven't been able to address yet for fear that the cloud's going to move it someplace and quell a lot of the fears. I know this is not like a hardware answer, but what I mean to say is that I feel like driving more hardware or basically more, you know, making use of all of this new technology has to have a demand stream. And I feel like one thing that we've been held back on in a way that we understand, like, DevOps better than we have before, but like RegOps, or, you know, the ability for regulated companies or, you know, governments who are sensitive about where their data is going to be stored, or WikiLeaks that might be sensitive about where their data is stored. You know, it comes down to getting a lot better conceptually about these sorts of things. And when that happens, I think that it actually is going to create a new hump of usage that would make brilliant use of this equipment.
It's an interesting view. I agree with that. This regulatory thing is far from over. Let's do a quick circle around of sort of the one major theme that we're going to be spending time watching relating to cloud in 2011. I'll go first so you guys can have a little time to think about it. The one that I wanted to talk about, we didn't get a chance to today, is the merging of cloud and mobile. And as we see smartphones emerging everywhere, tablets emerging everywhere, Apple, Android, Win 7, which I've seen the Win 7 phone, it is worth a look if you haven't seen it. They certainly have. I don't know if we can declare it a comeback yet, but it's certainly in that direction. So to me, the merging of cloud services with this, you know, abundance of different mobile devices that we're going to see is going to be a big thing. A friend of mine is working on a project with a big municipality where all of the municipal workers who are sort of field workers are now shifting to using iPads or other tablets. They're integrating from scratch these enterprise applications that for years people have been somewhat chained to their desk in a paper clipboard are now totally being freed to get their work orders and their job details out in the field on whatever device they have. I think this is just the beginning of the merging of cloud and mobile.
JP Morgan bought an iPad for everybody at the associate level or up. That is another example of that. But one interesting thing is, are they writing new apps, or are they using this as a new presentation layer for those apps? Because those are kind of
two. It'll be a combo, I would say.
Yeah.
It'll be a combo.
Because I do think that the new mobile apps market is somewhat distinct from the representation market.
Agreed.
And the new mobile apps market is much more platform as a service friendly and a lot of these trends that we talk about. The other side, I'm not quite sure how to insert kind of a radical cloud play into that scenario.
All right. Well, anyway, that's my pick for big trends merging and more merging, because we've seen a lot already of cloud and mobile. Who's up next?
I think databases as a service and how people do databases, which comes back to my issues from last year, which is around performance and I/O as well. But how people do that is going to be very interesting in the next year. And the breakdown of why people are choosing things, is it just scalable VMs, or is it more around the value add that you can have on that end? I think that's going to be a very interesting part of the platform as a service evolution.
I agree, databases are going to be great. What I've been thinking about a lot more in the last few months has been user data. This is sort of part of the question of what is cloud, right? Because many people say, well, cloud is anything that is a service. You know, Facebook is a cloud. And well, okay, according to our definition, it's not really as much of a cloud. But really, when you look at the big data revolution, a lot of it's driven by all of the clicks and all of the sharing of information about where you are, what you do on the entire internet. And that really lends itself to a cloud methodology. So I'd like to see, and I think there's going to be a further focus on application-level APIs to allow companies to share this information, and then the companies that don't, that are, you know, ingest only and not outgest companies. So what we've seen over just the last few months with, say, companies that like Twitter that are very open with sharing their data flows, compared to, say, a company like Facebook, which, you know, hoovers all the data in but won't let anything out. So I think we'll, and in the advertising market, I see companies like BlueKai, which attempt to be a clearinghouse for this kind of data. You pay them, you can get access to a broad variety of behavior. And a company like AppNexus, which uses cloud methodology and has a hosting system that allows new companies to come into the infrastructure, see a lot more behavior exist within the behavior infrastructure. So I see user data as driving a lot of cloud use.
Great. Adrian, your big cloud theme for 2011?
I'm just going to say that what I just mentioned earlier, basically we've got to get smarter about the location, jurisdiction, and stewardship issues that we have on cloud resources, so we can rope in all these players that currently can't be roped in. And for me, that's going to be a focus. I still think it'll be a bit of a niche, but it's very interesting work.
Great. Well, let's jump into the last few sections of the show. Meetups. Adrian, you were doing a lot of meetups at the end of 2010. Are there any upcoming for January, February you want to mention to the audience?
Sure. There's a couple Java-related ones, and there's also a general cloud-related one. So we've got a 14th of January doing a call with OSGI, and for those who don't know about that, that's basically a modular framework for Java. Helps you stitch your stuff together. Then at the end of January, going to do a meetup in Palo Alto at Skype headquarters for their cloud computing division, which should be really fun. So that'll be January, February, couple events. One in Denmark for the Java Gruppen, which they're having a cloud computing in Java conference, and then a few days later in Stockholm for JFocus, and it continues. So check out meetup.com/jclouds if you're interested in all of those and the ones following.
Adrian's on a meetup rampage.
A meetup rampage. Yeah. Are we going to have another SF Cloud Cloud Club meetup?
We can. I had an informal one last night. Essentially, I mean, I've just started kind of going out to dinner and drinks with folks.
But we need to have a one where we can get a big group together. So We haven't set the date, but we will.
Let's do it. I mean, if Brian's in, it's all about Brian.
Absolutely, let's do it.
On the show front, nothing I know of immediately in January or February, but in March, the GigaOM folks are putting on Structure Big Data in New York City. I'll be participating in that. So that is March 23rd. I will have a link to that in the show notes. Let's jump into the final section of the show, Cloud Tips, where we talk about cloud applications, tools, companies, product services that we think are interesting for the listeners. I'll go first. Folks know that I'm a presentation junkie and yet again have one related in that. This one is called Jing. It is a tool for doing quick screen sharing. So if you are trying to explain how to do something with a particular program, want to do a quick screenshot and then share that with one or more friends, you can use Jing to do that. Super easy, super simple. It's made by the same folks who make Camtasia Studio, which is a very useful tool if you like doing screencasts. So Jing is my cloud tip. Brian?
Loggly. I think Loggly is a really interesting tool. There's been a huge amount of work within visualization system. I don't know who of you caught the SF beta event in, I think it was early November, where there was a lot of great visualization tools, but of them, I thought Loggly, where you can just, you know, take the logs of your system and try to, you know, get some BI out of it. Really interesting tool.
Yeah, they're great guys. I've spent a lot of time with them.
Yeah, I'm curious about a little company called Mongo Labs, which is doing a RESTful service on top of a Mongo database. And I think they're going to be especially interesting for mobile developers. There was a couple cool presentations about them that I saw. This is a very small company. Don't want to make people think this is some, you know, big VC back thing, but it gets into that data as a service element that I think is going to be interesting the next year.
Adrian, your cloud tip?
Yep, just stumbled upon this one when I was over at the Riviera Jug in Nice. It's a tool called Elastic Detector, and basically it's some security-minded folks that are behind the toolbox called Cloudy Scripts, and basically looks at resource detection and other facets of security that are somehow slowly creeping into the cloud world.
Are you going to be doing the next show from Lake Como in Italy?
Who knows?
All right. Well, keep us posted on that itinerary. Those of us who don't have the ability to travel so extensively will just live through you vicariously.
You need to make one of those time-elapsed, like, dot transfers of everything you've done in Europe, Adrian, with, like, nice, like, piano music behind it, just showing, like...
Google Earth. I think you can do that in Google Earth. You can just make a movie out of
yeah.
dot to dot. So
the Flight of J-Clouds.
Would you do the Flight of J-Clouds for us, Adrian, on Google Earth, please?
You know, going and meeting Sam Jay at the Zurich Google office, I think they've one-upped Google Earth. I don't know, it's going to be Google Galaxy or something, but basically it's that's what I want to use. They've got this like cool globe room now that if anybody has a chance to get to the Zurich Google office, definitely play with that thing.
Which is an opportunity that falls in all of our laps.
Place dropper. I'm officially going to call Adrian a place dropper.
All right, well, let's wrap up with... Twitter addresses or any other websites or places that folks would like to share with folks. James, we'll start with you.
You can find me at @WatersJames, Waters is with two T's.
Brian?
At BeebleCow on Twitter, and CitrusLeaf is citrusleaf.net.
Adrian?
It's JClouds, at JClouds.
Great, and for me, Gary Orenstein, just at Gary Orenstein. And also, we have the Cloud Computing Show Twitter account up. We just do the basic show announcements there, but be sure to follow that. The address there is at Cloud Show. Well, that's a wrap. So thanks very much to our listeners. Thanks, guys, for joining. This was awesome. It was just 1 year ago today that we kicked off doing the roundtables every couple of months. It seems like 2 or 3 years, but I can't believe it.
Yeah, all from that one cloud club where we're all hanging out, so we definitely need to have another one.
Yeah, absolutely. Be sure to visit us at thecloudcomputingshow.com. Or email us at thecloudcomputingshow@gmail.com. And you can also subscribe on iTunes. Just do a quick search for The Cloud Computing Show or click through the link on the top right of our homepage, and that'll bring you directly to the subscription page on iTunes for the podcast. Thanks again, everyone. Have a great holiday time, new year, and we will see you in 2011. Bye-bye.